Today, December 9th, 2 years ago, was a Sunday, but Seattle City Hall was open for a very special occasion.
Do you, Danielle Marie Young, take Robin Diane Wiss from this day forward to be your lawful wedded partner?
I do.
But it wasn't just one wedding. More than 100 couples said, I do, that day. On December 9th, 2012, same-sex marriage became legal in Washington State. And since that day, same-sex marriage bans across the country have fallen like dominoes. Jonathan Rausch is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He told Marcy Selman that he traced the tipping point for same-sex marriage to a 2009 poll.
It's a question that Gallup had asked for decades. Are same-sex relationships, sexual relations, morally acceptable or morally unacceptable? And as you can imagine, forever, a large majority of Americans had said morally unacceptable. 2009, those lines converged. And after 2009, the lines crossed and never looked back. And to me, that's the real tipping point, because when people decide it's okay to be gay and it's okay to have loving sexual relationships, then the entire infrastructure of discrimination against gay people just begins to collapse, because its moral foundations have just eroded out from under it.
Is there, besides the fact that it was 2009 and there was this survey given, was there one particular thing that pushed the majority of Americans to say, hey, this is a morally acceptable way to live?
No, it was a perfect storm. It's never just one thing that could drive social change this quickly. The same-sex marriage movement was essentially stalled for many years, and gay rights moved very slowly for many years without much progress on the ground. And that's how civil rights movements usually are. Think how long it took women to get the vote and to get all the way to where they are today. And that progress, of course, is not complete. What happened with same-sex marriage is a few things all hit simultaneously. One of them was, by the late 2000s, about three-quarters of the American public knew someone who was gay, had a gay friend or coworker or family member. And that was had flipped over what was the case 20 years earlier, when two-thirds to three-quarters did not know someone who was gay. So these were people they cared about. And it's, you know, hard to hate people that you care about or hard to dislike them. So that was one thing. Another is that we'd had same-sex marriage on the books in Massachusetts since 2004, and nothing bad had happened at all to straight marriage or to children or to families or anything else. Another thing that happened was that President Obama switched sides. And then one other thing that happened that I think was very important is the conservative case for same-sex marriage broke through. Instead of just saying, hey, you know, this is about fairness, we want equality, give us our civil rights, all of which is important, gay people had also been saying, look, this is about building families and stabler societies and being better members of our communities and taking better care of our kids. All the conservative arguments for gay marriage, and that started finally to resonate with people. And when all of that hit more or less at the same time, that's when you get this big tip.
I'm talking with Jonathan Rausch, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. You mentioned several things that I couldn't help but compare in my head to, say, the civil rights, the African-American civil rights movement. We all know people who are African-American. There are African-American families. The president, officials have come out in support of civil rights. What makes gay rights different from that movement?
Well, you know, it's hard to talk about that because there's so many similarities yet so many differences. You know, to me, Marcy, race relations are in a separate category in America because of the history of slavery, because of the Civil War, because of Jim Crow, because of all that's happened. Black civil rights are just a stain on this country's past and one that's going to take a very long time to eradicate. But something else that happened was that, you know, the gay civil rights movement came along later, after we'd had experience with African Americans and women and Hispanics and other groups that had said, you know, we want equality. And society had begun to figure out that granting equality was a good thing, that all the terrible things that would happen wouldn't. So in that sense, I think that we benefited from standing on the shoulders of some of these earlier movements that really had a very long, hard road.
Standing on the shoulders of those movements, what sorts of lessons did the gay rights movement learn from the movement for racial equality?
Never give up. Understand that at the beginning you're going to be in situations that seem to be completely hopeless. We had in the same-sex marriage movement, we had the most perfect record of political defeat I think ever compiled in the United States of America. We lost, I think, 31 out of 30, yes, it is possible, states that put same-sex marriage on the ballot. And we lost 31 because Arizona did it twice and rejected gay marriage the second time around. Not a single state voted for us. But we hung in there, and we took some inspiration from people in other movements who had gone first and who in some cases had seen worse, often much worse. We did not have to deal with dogs and fire hoses, and that was a very good thing. The other thing we learned is that once you can prick the conscience of the American people, things can change very fast. And that's why we tried to use our voices consistently to talk about not just fairness and equality, but kindness and compassion. And these are the themes that ultimately resonate. It takes a while, but they ultimately really get through to people.
Jonathan, listening to you speak, I wonder what lessons other civil rights movements might learn from the move for same-sex marriage. And I'm thinking specifically of the immigration rights movement at this point.
Well, they're all different. You know, immigration rights is a complicated policy question because, you know, there's so much involved with immigration. And I don't think there's any template that lets you just say, well, here's the one-size-fits-all formula. I think they're all just very different. My generic advice, if I had any, would be remember that if you're a minority in a free society like America, that the weapon that you really have that really works in the long run is cheap, and in fact, it's free, but it's never easy, and it's speech. It's using your tongue and using your pen to make the best arguments you can. And I tell people all the time, you know, efforts to regulate speech, like hate speech and college campus speech codes that's supposed to protect minorities from hate speech, those are not minorities' friend, actually. The First Amendment, not the 14th Amendment, will be the key constitutional provision that won gay rights in America.
I'm talking with Jonathan Rauch. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. And we started the conversation talking about the tipping point for same-sex marriage really 5 years ago at this point, probably almost six. So now that we have seen state by state around the country actually start either voting in or legislating in same-sex marriage, does that mean the movement is over?
No, definitely not. It is easy to get too self-congratulatory, but there are many states, particularly in the South, red states, in which it is still the case that a majority of people oppose same-sex marriage. We're still seeing efforts to get anti-discrimination laws passed in most states. Most states, it's perfectly legal to fire someone from their job just because they're gay and you don't like that. You're a homosexual, get out of here. That said, I'm now pretty confident about where the country is headed, and I think it's a matter of when, not whether.
Is there ever an end point for civil rights movements, I wonder? Isn't there always another road to cross, another bar to jump?
No, I think actually there's a transition point. I don't think that minorities should be in the mindset of being perpetual victim groups, you know, always looking for some other right to claim. I think at some point we cross a bridge to being like the Jews in America. I'm not just gay, I'm Jewish. And that is to understand that we have won civic equality and that we pass into a mode of eternal vigilance. Now, vigilance means you never let your guard down and you don't backslide. You don't become complacent, and you certainly don't oppress others if you're ever in a position to be able to do that. But it does mean you move beyond the victim mindset and you understand yourself as a fully equal, fully mature part of the American mosaic. And I think gay people are, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years from that now, maybe being a little optimistic, but maybe not. This thing's gone so much faster than I would have thought.
He's Jonathan Rauch, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He spoke with Marcy Silman. It was 2 years ago today that same-sex marriage became legal in Washington State. This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.